session number 17365, Reel 6.
Warrington, Reel 6.
Yes. I can remember Banks buying, inverted commas, some tobacco once. And I got a 2 ounce tin for about 4 ounces of chocolate. Because chocolate was so valuable. And that's just one example of what it was like. And depending on what was happening, so the prices varied from day to day. If there was a time when we didn't have any food parcels from the Red Cross due to the German railways struggling, food would go up immensely.
Did anybody make a profit from this?
I mean, if they did, it wouldn't be any good to them, because, I mean, when you left, well, you left you left your points behind, didn't you? Anyway, then the Brits was coming from the West, and we began to get excited again. I keep thinking of things. There's one thing here. There was in the Milag, there was a kitchen which was staffed by other ranks. And that's where I think a lot of rackets used to take place, because they got first choice, you know, on the potatoes and things like this. But when they'd peeled all the potatoes, they would make soup with it, and then they would throw all the peelings out of the window into the dirt. And all we officers used to be standing about with a cardboard box, waiting for this to come through. When it fell in the sand, we all rushed forward and got the biggest pieces of thing you could. And I remember one fellow who had long hairs said, "Haven't I seen you in the Strand, in the something, you know, old chap?" And this was what it was like, really.
You were just about to tell me about
the liberation. I was going to tell you, wait a minute. So, right, the Brits were coming, and everybody knew they were coming, and we had a big row with the Germans about something at once, because they said they weren't going to give us our Red Cross food in tins, it was all going to be tipped out. Well, we refused to have this, and so we refused to have the parcels, so we had about a week without any parcels at all, which was terrible. But then it came to the time when we were ready to go. It was, of course, much better weather. In fact, it was beautiful weather. People had made trolleys and things to pull things on. And so we all set off one morning, I think. And this, of course, would be in April. And the Germans didn't want to march any more than we did, because we wanted to be relieved, and so did they, by the British troops. They didn't want to be going east. They were terrified of the Russians. So, I mean, we did this march, and we used to march perhaps 5 miles a day, dawdling along, making excuses, refusing to get up when we were told to, sitting about in beautiful sunshine. Every night we just slept in the fields, covered ourselves with our greatcoats and blankets, except for one night when it rained, which was absolutely horrible, just lying there in the open field with rain pouring down, and you feel so stupid. Eventually we got into Lübeck. Did we stay in Lübeck? Anyway, we got to Lübeck. Well, near Lübeck. We were in a village. I can't remember what it was called. Oh, we were on a farm. That's right. We were on a farm. It's come to me now. No, it hasn't. It's gone. That's at the second place. We were on a farm. They didn't know what to do with us, I think, really. They were going to put us into Lübeck, but there was supposed to be a lot of disease there, so we never stopped the night in Lübeck. But we went back into the country and into a village. I can't remember what they call it. But there we just found our own lodgings. We went where we could find somewhere to live and sleep. And five of us went into a barn which was full of straw. The sun was shining. There was potatoes in the field there for the picking. We did deals with the natives over eggs and chickens and things. And it was a very happy, nearly ending. All the time the Germans were supposed to be finding somewhere to put us, but we were there about 5 or 6 days, and it was really heaven on earth was that. Then, unfortunately, they said they're going to move us again. So one Saturday morning, I think it was, we moved, walking. They even provided some transport for our luggage, and went to a place called Wulmenau, somewhere not far from Lübeck. And Trentenhorst, there were two, we were split up into two parties. We were in a great huge barn there. A barn, I remember the ceiling, it had these roof beams, wonderful shapes, and you know, it must have been there for centuries, this barn. It was a very, very big farm. They had about 100 Frisian cattle there, and the biggest bull I've ever seen. There were also some Russian prisoners who used to work in the fields, and at night they came into the yard outside this barn, and they were locked in this small place. And they used to play their balalaikas to entertain us. There was also a house there. House there, it must have been the farmer's house, I suppose. And there was also a sort of boss man who used to come around on a horse. I can remember going to church there in a granary. So a few days went by, and we could hear the guns getting louder and louder. It was the Brits coming. This was in northern Germany, you see, near Bremen. Then the weather had changed. It wasn't nice at all. There were long days in a railway because you knew it was nearly the end, but you just wanted the end to come quicker. You were dirty, you see. You were messing about cooking this food, so-called food, on these fires. It was muddy out at the back. It was really absolutely horrible. And then one morning, at the end of the road from this farm, they put a notice up: British Air Force prisoners ahead, first on the right or left or something. And suddenly there was this great shout went up, and they'd arrived. I dashed down this lane. You could see this tank or personnel carrier coming up the road. Everybody laid down in case they didn't know, in case it wasn't a Brit. And there it was this thing, and we were free. I think it was a Tuesday or a Wednesday morning, and then we were free. We wandered about. I went into, people went all over the world, and I went into Lübeck, and they were coming back with cars and motorbikes. And one black with a fire engine. They pinched these things. So I had a friend called Frank Reese, and we said, we must go to Lübeck and get a car. So we went to Lübeck and spoke to a soldier and said, can you get us a car? So he said, yes, come with me. So we went to this house, and he'd got a car, this poor fellow, and he showed him a piece of paper and said he'd got to take this car for the military. And Frank Reese and I just took this car and we drove it all over the place, went out into the country and went back to camp in it. When I say camp, to this barn. I suppose he would get it back after the war, poor fellow. I mean, it's a horrible thing to do, isn't it, really? And of course, food then had finished to mean anything at all. It just disappeared overnight. You didn't really want anything. You'd had so much chocolate thrown at you by these soldiers.
I can remember going, perhaps the same afternoon or the next afternoon, we went into an officer's mess. They'd taken over a house. I mean, they just used to say, get out, we're coming here. You know, you used to think it was terrible. The way they treated them, really, but I mean, I suppose they were conquering troops. So we went into this lovely house, and there we were drinking out of a cup with a saucer and this carpet, and you were so filthy and dirty, you felt absolutely horrible. I did meet a soldier there I was talking to, and he came from Hull, and he said he was going on leave, so I gave him a note on a piece of scrap paper, which I've still got, because he gave it to my parents, and I said where I was, and I said, I hope to be home soon or something, and I'm fit. Because, you see, we hadn't had any mail for months. Either way, we'd been on the march. We'd never had any mail since leaving Sagan, and even that was 2 months old when we left then, like it was previous November or something. You've no idea if anybody was alive or dead.
So how did you eventually get home?
Somebody, wait a minute. Something crossed my mind then. Ah, some fellas were looting, which was terrible. These are RAF officers I'm talking about. I went in with a bunch of fellas into this house to these two terrified old ladies, and they went into the cellar, and there were all these bags of sugar and all sorts of things that they shouldn't have. So people were filling up bags of sugar, and to my credit, I filled a bag of sugar, and then I changed my mind, and I tipped it back in, because I didn't think it was right that poor old doddering women of 60 or 70, they would have been absolutely horrified by our presence, wouldn't they? Absolutely horrified. That was that. So, one day in Lübeck, and I think it was 2 or 3 days, when we set off at night. So the lorries came in. You know, we're in only 2 or 3 days, but you're absolutely going frantic because you just want to get home. And why aren't we going home? I mean, I understand if you were a Russian prisoner of war, released by the Russians, they gave you a gun and you were in the bloody front row in the fighting line again. But anyway, we set off, and that night we came to Lüneburg, I think. And it was very odd to see these German prisoners of war in the fields, just like we'd been 2 or 3 days before. A complete reversal. Not a lot of damage there. Got to this place at Lüneburg where we had some white bread, which tasted like cake. I never touch white bread now. And I think we were there about 2 nights. We went out into the town one night, and in a shop window were all these pictures of Belsen, these bodies, and we were looking at them, and the German civilians were looking at them, the same. They put them there just to show, and they were going tut 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 naturally. They were as horrified as we were. Most of the houses had white flags flying out of the window, white sheets or something like this, you know. The whole place was, and they had a list on the door of who lived in each house. But then away we went the next day, and we were told we were going to somewhere, we were going to fly home that day, which turned out to be a load of balls. We didn't, and everybody got very cross about this, because they didn't really know what was happening, I don't think. Where we were going to fly from, there wasn't even an aerodrome. But however, we kept going, and we eventually came to an aerodrome whose name eludes me, unless it happens to be in my logbook at the end. Perhaps I might have put the name in, because I flew from there. Diepholz was the name of the place. So I suppose it was about 8 o'clock at night there when we got there, and so we just spent the night there. I don't know what we did about food, I've no idea. We just dosed down where we could. I went into the
one of the administrative offices, along with a man called Don Shipley from Australia. I spent my last night in Germany with him. He and I dust down in this thing, and then the next morning we were all out on the aerodrome, and we were arranged into parties, depending on first in, first out. So all those who had been there 5 or 6 years were in the first lot. I was in about the 18th, I think. You know, there were, I don't know how many they took on a plane, about 20 perhaps, really. And then you just had to wait. And I think it was perhaps about 5 o'clock when we took off in a Dakota and we flew home. On the eve, I think it was on the 7th or 8th, we knew that peace had been declared. And we landed at Leighton Buzzard, or somewhere near Leighton Buzzard.
Wing, according to
Wing, correct. After a short time, we went to Leighton Buzzard and got on a train. When I say we, I mean, I can't really remember who there was really now. We were still in all these filthy clothes. we'd seen all the fireworks going up as we were flying over. Got on this train, had to sit in the corridor, got to, can't remember where the place was now. Cosford. Cosford, which was a place which was receiving prisoners of war. I think at Wing, it must have been daylight when we landed there, because I can remember getting out of this plane there and kissing the ground, and into this hangar we went, where all these women voluntary services with these cakes and sandwiches and beer. No, I don't think there was any beer. The reception committee, it was just absolutely fantastic. You couldn't really believe it was happening to you. And it was then, that was before getting on the train, that was at Wing, definitely. We were allowed to send a telegram home, which they probably wrote out for us, I would imagine, and Cosford, and we got there quite early in the morning, you know, 3 or 4 o'clock. I went to bed for a bit, then got up, threw all your clothes away and had a bath, and got a brand new RAF battle dress on with no insignia, no rank, no emblem, observer's wings or anything at all. But I had to come home in that. You know, you felt nobody somehow. All your ranks and badges and medals had gone off, and there you were in this battle dress with nothing on it at all. So that night we were sent off. Oh, we were interrogated during the day and things. And when I was in Germany, I'd made a list of things that I was going to do when I got home. I was going to go out and eat this, and I was going to out and eat that, and I was going to go to a dance, and I was going to find a girl. But I also said I would go to church and give thanks for Maritain. And that was the only promise I kept. I went into this church at Cosford on my own and knelt down and said a heartfelt thank you. We got a warrant, a travel warrant for Hessel, and we went off on the first part, went to Birmingham. And for some reason or other, I was with a Polish fella who I'd known quite well in Germany. I can't remember his name. And we stayed a night in Birmingham. We booked in at a posh hotel with plenty of money, of course. They must have given us some money. And I met a man there that I knew, who'd been at Harwell when I was training at Harwell. He was the only man, squad leader Dinning, I think they called him. So anyway, we went out. Oh, God, the college fellow's done something esky. We went out and we went into a pub and we were absolutely lost.
There were all these girls drinking, and, you know, it was the eve of VE Day, I think. I think the next day was a day off. And everybody was just getting all tanked up. Well, we had about half a pint each, and I really couldn't face it anymore. I never felt like speaking to anybody, because you're in this uniform with nothing on it. Nobody knows who you are. You look absolutely nameless somehow. And so we went to bed and got a train next morning, came to Leeds, swapped over trains there. I think I'd rung home from Cosford, found out to my relief that David, my brother, was still alive. He was out in Italy. Everybody else was alive, and so forth. I said goodbye to this Polish fella in Leeds. I sometimes wondered afterwards, well, I should have brought him home, but I mean, I don't know really how he would have fitted in and how long he might have stayed, as his home was Poland. God, I wish I could remember his name. So I went into the Queen's Hotel in Leeds for a cup of tea. In this featureless uniform. I mean, I'd been sitting in a first-class carriage, you see, in this featureless uniform. I don't know if any inspector said anything to me, but I mean, I did have a first-class warrant, being an officer. I went and had this tea, and really, I saw these people sitting there eating this cake and drinking this tea, and I thought, you have no idea. You have no idea, I thought. Anyway, I got on the train for Hull, and they were going to meet me at Brough, you see, like I did with you today. So it was afternoon. It would be 4 or 5 o'clock, I suppose. And there's my mum. What can you say? just put it down. So there's the family to meet me. I must have looked a terrible sight. I hadn't had a haircut since the previous November, and I was terribly brown, having spent all those wonderful days walking about in Germany and sleeping in the fields. I really looked an absolute picture of health. I'd put on weight, of course, in the last few weeks. And we came home, and really that was it. All I wanted to do for days was just sit in the garden and do nothing.